A critical reader of the history of marriage understands that it is an institution that has always been in flux. It is also a decidedly complicated one, existing simultaneously in the realms of religion, law, and emotion. And yet recent years have seen dramatic and heavily waged battles over the proposition of including same-sex couples in marriage. Just what is at stake in these battles? A question addressed in the new book, License to Wed, What Legal Marriage Means to Same-Sex Couples. Kimberly Richmond joins us. She's an associate professor of sociology and legal studies at the University of San Francisco, and we welcome her to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
What led you to this subject and to look at the meaning of legal marriage?
You know, as a resident of San Francisco, as I wrote in the book, I awoke to the news one morning in February of 2004 that our mayor had made the unprecedented decision to go ahead and open up City Hall to same-sex couples. I think everyone was shocked. I was, at the time, writing a different book, doing research on LGBT custody and adoption, and I saw just how much impact it has on families, same-sex-headed families, when the adult's relationship is not legally recognized. And so that drew me to what was going on at San Francisco's City Hall, and literally lines and lines of couples wrapped around the building waiting for the opportunity to get a marriage license. And I was struck by that and their reasons for being there.
One of the things that is so hard to understand, and you touch on this in the book about this journey of marriage for same-sex couples, is that the states where it goes through and there isn't legal turbulence will often surprise you. In states where you would think that it would go through without a hitch, it doesn't happen, which of course indicates that one size does not fit all. Do you think that the path will become less rocky as time goes on and states have worked through these various hiccups?
I think the path has already become less rocky, quite honestly. I mean, you know, I was as surprised as anyone when Iowa became one of the first states to legalize same-sex marriage. And I think that the virtual onslaught we've seen of legal changes in the last year and a half is evidence that it's become a lot easier road. Now that we've had 10 years of marriage equality in Massachusetts, and people in other states have looked around and seen, you know, the sky hasn't fallen.
And yet you look at a state like Utah, where it's on again, off again, on again, off again. And is that part of the process, or does that strengthen it in some ways, or are there very real ways that can be avoided altogether?
You know, different states have such different legal cultures and legal mechanisms for doing this. Some states, you know, have gained marriage equality by judicial fiat. You know, it wasn't the voice of the people. It was a state Supreme Court saying this is what's constitutional, and maybe the populace agreed and maybe they didn't. Other states held it to a popular vote or took different routes. Utah was a surprise, but not unprecedented, because it's actually very similar to what happened in California, where we had on again, off again, on again, off again. And I think that in California, it was such a unique set of circumstances that it actually provides a bit of a model for Utah, for the justices in Utah to look to and see, okay, this is what the Supreme Court did in California with this unique circumstance where a certain number of couples were able to get in and get licenses, and then that was cut off, and they exist in this kind of legal island, essentially. And I don't think that path is any better or worse than any other path. It's certainly more difficult for the couples involved because it puts them in a state of limbo. But in seeing what's happened in the 17-plus states, 18 if you count Utah, where this has happened, there's not necessarily one best way. Mm. And as long as it's through valid legal mechanisms, it will accomplish the goal.
So there are the legalities, of course, but at the core of this are the same-sex couples who are seeking to marry for a variety of reasons, and they're interacting, and they are overlapping, and they are evolving, and that is one thing that is the constant that doesn't change, even though the laws are different from state to state.
Absolutely. I was really struck by the similarities that I found with couples in California versus Massachusetts. The big difference being that in California we had domestic partnership laws that really cover all of, at that time, covered all the same rights that you would have at the state level in a marriage, and Massachusetts didn't have that. They didn't have any form of relationship recognition. So you'd think it'd be a very different set of circumstances and reasons for wanting to get married, and in fact it wasn't. I heard some really common themes echoed in both states. And I don't think we should be surprised at the end of the day that different couples have different reasons for getting married and it means different things to them, because you know there's diversity in heterosexual couples who decide to get married or don't decide to get married as well.
What is at stake for these couples who seek marriage?
I think what's uniquely at stake, there are a number of things at stake, I should say. Certainly in those, God forbid, what if circumstances where a partner is in a car accident or one mother in a lesbian couple passes away and or there's a child custody battle, there's quite a bit at stake. But even in the everyday circumstances, what I found that really what's at stake for a lot of couples is a sense of civic personhood and a sense of social belonging. Many couples told me that they may have been with their partner for 18, 20 years, and yet their families didn't see the partner as a part of the family until they got legally married.
You touched on this, but looking at Massachusetts in 10 years, so what have we seen from the couples that have married? You mentioned that you know, legally, okay, of all of the objections, okay, the sky hasn't fallen. What has it meant for those couples? Because the data is now starting to come in as to what it means and the significance of marriage to those who have been now once excluded, now included, and what it has meant to them for nearly a decade.
Mm-hmm. One of the things we now know is that it's better for kids if those couples do have kids, that there are very real tangible and psychological benefits for children whose parents are able to be legally recognized as a unit. Another thing that we've seen is that it becomes much easier for gay and lesbian individuals to be out and feel safe in their communities. It almost forces them out by having a public marriage ceremony, but it's also giving them the imprimatur of, if you will, of the state stamp of approval, and it means something to them. It means they feel safer walking the streets and being who they are.
Where do you see this going? As you mentioned, 18 states if you include Utah. So over the next year, where do you think we'll be?
Oh, gosh. that's a hard one for me to answer because I never would have guessed last year or 2 years ago where we are right now. I do think that the next step is interstate recognition. And it's the piece of the Defense of Marriage Act that was not touched by the recent Supreme Court decision in U.S. versus Windsor. The piece that says if you're married in California and you move to Arizona, your marriage is still recognized. We don't have that yet, and it's causing really big problems for folks who have to relocate for their jobs, or who get married in one state and then move to another state and decide to divorce. And guess what? That state doesn't recognize their marriage, so they won't divorce them. So we're seeing all kinds of complications as far as interstate recognition and the vestiges that we still have of the Defense of Marriage Act, and I really think that's the next round.
Do you think it will remain a political issue, a hot political issue, even a defining issue in a presidential or even a congressional or Senate campaign? Or if we moved beyond that maybe a little bit?
I think we've started moving beyond that. It may still have resonance in certain states at the state level, but I think this past presidential term and election was a watershed, and that it wasn't the wedge issue that it once was. in that a sitting president felt comfortable enough to come out and support marriage equality for the first time in U.S. history. So I don't see it as the nationwide wedge issue it once was. I see it losing its resonance, its political resonance in that way. But I still think it's hotly contested in many of the states. And again, it really just depends on the kind of the legal and cultural and social environment in those states.
And what is fascinating is, as you just mentioned in the answer to your question, of you couldn't imagine where this was 2 years ago. That evolution is happening faster than anyone would have expected.
Certainly. It was for many years, it was a hurry up and wait, hurry up and wait. The first push for marriage equality was in the 1970s, and then it lay dormant for many years. We had Hawaii in 1996, and then that lay dormant for many years. And so in the last decade, there's been unprecedented movement, especially in the last 2 years. Everyone in the gay rights, most people in the gay rights community were really concerned that the issue was going to the Supreme Court too quickly, and that that it wasn't going to go well, that this wasn't a friendly Supreme Court panel for these two cases that were heard, Perry and Windsor. And lo and behold, it was really a watershed moment.
Of course, we could argue, I mean, it seems as though it's, you look at it and you think, well, why is this a fight? Why does it have to be a fight? And we can look and explore all of those questions. But going back to something that I asked earlier, does the fact that it is a fight and that it is and has been a fight in certain places, does that strengthen the movement? Is that good for the movement?
I don't know. I don't know that it is. There's two ways to think about this. One is what's good for a movement in terms of rallying the base, in terms of media coverage. Certainly a non-issue is not going to get media coverage and traction and attract donations. At the same time, these are real people's real lives that are at stake. And so at some point, you have to balance what's good for a broader movement and what's good for the individual constituents whom that movement represents.
The name of the book is License to Wed, What Legal Marriage Means to Same-Sex Couples. It is published by New York University Press. Kimberly Richmond, thank you very much for spending time with us this morning. I appreciate your expertise.
Thank you so much for having me.
Again, the title of the book, License to Wed. It is published by NYU. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.